How high's the water, Mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. We can make it to the road in a homemade boat. That's the only thing we got left to float. It's already over all of wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rising. Well, the hives are gone. I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past the knees. 3 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Papa? Said it's 4 feet high and rising. Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high's the water, Papa? She said it's 5 feet high and rising. Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. We can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising.
White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. And this is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, right here in the bunker in North Central Indiana, where it snowed last night. Can you believe it? I was running around in my shorts yesterday and warming up all over the place. Got up this morning, we had about a half to an inch of snow on the ground. I can't believe it. And it's supposed to go up to 50 degrees today. Boy, oh boy, that weather changing is really getting interesting, isn't it? Well, it's March the 20th today. Moving on down the line towards the end of the month. Don't forget, if you haven't gotten your donations for the show in, get them in here to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Send your snail mail there, too. And if you want to send prisoner mail, POW mail, but you don't want to have your name all over it, well, I'll resend them for you. As long as you agree to let me read them before I send them, because I don't want to make things worse for the guys in the prison, the political prisoners. It's already bad enough for them. I know there's a lot of the right wing, they never use any sense, and a lot of the skinheads and people, they try to send straight, raw, racist material into a POW. Well, number one, they usually won't let it through, and number two, don't you think that affects their parole possibilities a little bit? But there's no use talking about it much because those people over there in that old right wing, they're going to do everything that's wrong like they've been doing since the beginning. You name it, if there's something to do wrong, they'll find a way of doing it. I just dropped one POW from the list for the money orders that we send out. $25. Try to do it every month, and that's thanks to you people out there to keep that program going. But the person has not learned a bit, and he's right over in the right wing crap again, and he's promoting it all over the place, and I assume all those right wingers are going to support him with money, so I'm going to put my money with other POWs that know the score or not playing the old game. So I'm not going to say the name, but that's the story. We're going to support people who understand the situation and don't want to do the same old thing over and over and over and screw it up. Well, one of our lone wolves out there tell me there's going to be another worldwide white march tomorrow, like they did once before and got a few dozen people. It didn't make any difference if they'd had a million people. Wouldn't have made a bit of difference. I don't doubt their good intentions, this fellow says, of the people organizing this. I do, because a lot of these guys are either stupid or they're doing it as a false flag situation for the system. I mean, you can't, it's one of the two. Because anybody who knows anything knows that the marches, whether right or left, don't change anything. Even the progressives are talking about that. They don't change anything. The only thing I'd say, if you're ever going to have enough people to march, you carry your 30-06s and torches and get serious. Otherwise, don't expose yourself. Just take care of your situation, plan for the future, train yourself. Have a couple of guns around, know how to use them. Have some knives around, know how to use them. And sit tight. He went on to say, what you're really saying is agents, agent provocateurs, and SPLC members, please join us. Right. That's why I say infiltrate whatever the other side is. Don't have a march. Infiltrate the other guy's march. I don't know what they're never going to learn, because I've told them over and over and over again. Your marches fly against all logic at this point. In fact, these marches are used to show how weak we are, or at least who I think we are. And also as an area to gather information on people that later may do something actively, and having marched in the parade, had their picture taken, all that stuff, going to lead the people right to you. So anyhow, I've said it for 30 years, and I keep saying it, but there's always a new crop of so-called leaders come on the scene, and they think they know everything's. They think they know it all, and they don't know shit. They don't even know the history of a lot of things. They don't know that we got Nazis who don't know the history of National Socialism. We got fascists who don't know the history of fascism. We got we got anarchists that never read Bakunin or Kropotkin. And march with communists. And that's what's funny, because a real anarchist would not march with a communist. Wouldn't be done, but they do it today. So everybody's trying to, all these people trying to do something, they don't know where in the hell to begin, and I'll advise them and help them if they want it, but if they don't come to me and ask, forget it. And when they do come to me and ask, and I tell them the score and why these parades are stupid, okay, and then they go right out and do it. Like that that demonstration for Gary Yarbrough over in London, England. That was about as useful as tits on a boar hog. These are the things that sound good on paper. We're going to show Gary, we love Gary, but in fact it turns right around and does him more harm than good, because the system is happy when you're unhappy. Conversely, that's why we should be happy when the system is unhappy. Don't you know that? I mean, the more you whine about this kind of stuff, the worse it makes. Best thing you can do to somebody in prison is just be nice, send them letters, send them cards, send them books, send them money, whatever you can do. Because anything beyond that, the system's going to just sit there and laugh and chuckle. Look at those dumbasses. They think they're going to do something really great for Gary Yarbrough. No, they're just spending a lot of money, and that's to make them feel good. If I march around the city hall with a flag, it's going to make me feel good, man. And then I can go down to the bar and have a few drinks, and I'm a true racial patriot. Incidentally, I hate that term, patriot. The people I advocate to march are enemies, the anti-racists. When they march, I want to get all the pictures, get all the names, get all the license plates I can get. Of the leaders, the followers don't make any difference. But whenever there's an anti-march out there, you go there with your camera, dressed in a way that's fitting for the occasion. that you don't look like an outsider, and find out, you can spot who the leaders are and get their license plate numbers and get their names, if you can get their addresses, and just build yourself a little file. That's more important than all this pro-white marching. Well, what the hell is going on with these Negro preachers? Let's hear a little bit of this about this guy that wants a Gulfstream jet, and his faithful slave followers are going to buy it for him.
Here tonight?
Okay, we've got to talk about that Jesus jet.
God took a blood sworn oath.
This Atlanta-based megachurch in the firing line after urging its members to fund a new Gulfstream jet for its controversial leader, Pastor Creflo Dollar.
A new jet? I don't know if I should be more shocked at a new jet or that his name is Creflo Dollar. I mean, seriously, that it just seems so on the nose, you know. It'd be like if a serial killer was named Jack Knife. Right? Or a bank robber named Philip Z. Bag. Right? Or a name you guys come up with, so tweet your suggestions with the hashtag on the nose name. All right? Okay, but let's get back to that Jesus jet.
Creflo Dollar created this G650 project, asking 200,000 people to donate $300 or more.
The exact jet Dollar was seeking is a Gulfstream G650, which has a price tag of about $65 million. Bloomberg describes it as the holy grail of jets.
$65 million? For $65 million, you could buy the jet. Right? You could. I mean, you'd be overpaying for that too, mind you. So what exactly is the message Creflo Dollar wants to spread whilst careening through the skies in his private jet?
Dollar is famous for his so-called prosperity gospel, claiming riches will come to his followers who donate to the church.
Prosperity gospel? Damn, goodbye fire and brimstone, hello Dolce and Gabbana, huh? And it seems like this message might be catching on, but not everybody's a convert. Take us to Sunday school, noted religious scholar Reza Aslan.
The fastest growing Protestant movement in North America is this movement that is referred to as the prosperity gospel. The argument of the prosperity gospel, if I can put it flippantly, is that Jesus wants you to drive a Bentley.
Yeah, that's right. I feel the power of a V8. I'm not talking about the drink. I'm talking about 400 heavenly horses pulling me. And on the third day, when your credit cleared up, something was delivered. I ain't talking about a Maybach. Who's that Mercedes? Get that devil out of here. Here's what I'm talking about. No. Can I have an amen for a Bentley? I said, can I have an amen for a Bentley? Can I get a ride to the store because I wasn't able to make the payments for my Bentley? Now, look, I know you're thinking, Bentleys, private planes, how much do these jet-setting profits of profit margins make anyway? All right, well, let's just take a look. Creflo is actually at the bottom of the list, and it may be due to the fact that he's only asking for money. Some of these preachers work hard for the money. Does he have the force?
Take it! Take it!
Oh, my God. That is the worst. I have never seen such horrible... I mean, he's awesome. He's awesome. Oh, my God. Look. These guys are the modern-day snake oil salesmen. Now, I wanted to talk to an expert about this, so please welcome our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, to the program. Very good. Very good. Good job. Have a seat there.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show, Jesus.
Thank you. Sorry,
Don't want to...
All right.
Very symbolic. Don't want to lose that, right?
Yes, blessed to be here, Larry. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Now, Jesus, we've been talking about the prosperity gospel and these money-loving preachers like this one in Atlanta who asked everyone to buy him a new luxury jet. So I'd love to get your take on this.
Oh, that's a lovely wine. Nice wine.
We put water in there.
I mean, Larry.
Oh, got it. All right, okay. I made coffee earlier. Not the same. Okay. So I wasn't trying to make us equal. Right. Okay. So
when he said that this preacher is at the bottom of the list on the money making, he takes in $27 million a year. And he's at the bottom of the list. And these were mostly the black preachers this guy was talking about. He's a high yellow mulatto comedian. He's got a hell of a lot of white in him and even his features. But anyhow, that's his stick, and I agree with him on that. These people, these preachers, are robbers and thieves. But on the other hand, I was talking to my lady about these people. There's a show called Greed, in which they tell all these stories about people who invested in too good to be true ventures, and they lost their ass. And you just have to sit back and say, well, you deserve it. Whenever somebody comes at you and says, I got a deal here you can't miss, and you put all your savings and your retirement into it, and you lose your ass, it's your problem. Survival of the fittest. And these are the same people that when the investors or the people they're investing in tell them about how wonderful it is, the thing they're building or building a building or whatever, manufacturing company, they never even go out and check. They never even go out and look at the supposed business area that they're building and the manufacturing factory they're supposed to be building. And I mean, you know, if you're going to invest $200,000 or $300,000 in something, don't you think you ought to go out and see if what they're saying is true? I have absolutely no sympathy, because Mother Nature has rules. And if you're a fool, you're going to be treated like a fool. And you look at these preachers, they're all over even on the cable, they're all over. And they've always usually got about 1,000 people in their audience, yelling, screaming, jumping up and down, waving their arms and giving them all kinds of money. Now, do you really want to have a racial separatist nation with those kind of people in it, even though they're white, even though you might call them Aryan? I really don't. I don't want to be around those people. I'm around a lot of them here in the Midwest, but I don't have to put up with them because I don't go to their mind control centers. I don't listen to their psycho babble about Jesus and all that stuff and Israel and all that. So I can get away from it, even though they're close. But to say we got to have white separation and then say we're going to include millions of these stupid brain dead whites, I don't think so. I just don't think so. I don't think it would be worth it. If we had a nation now and had it converted to an all-white Christian Zionist and fundamentalist population, I couldn't live there. I'd have to go someplace. I'd have to go down there like what's his name of the Klan, down to Belize, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that's why Bill Wilkinson fled the country. He couldn't take the insanity. And I know probably after running the Klan for 10 years, whether he was honest or not honest, he realized it was an impossible situation to have all those people in the Klan going in the right direction. It's impossible. He threw up his hands and went to Belize. He's sitting there with the niggers drinking mint juleps. Well, here's a comment from one of our lone wolves, She-Wolf out there. And this is She-Wolf Day. Yeah, Freya's Day. Oh, incidentally, when you want a song played, unfortunately, when you send it to me earlier in the week, it gets usually lost in the shuffle. So try to send it to me the day before, like on Thursday, for a request for a song, and then I'm probably not going to lose it, or I can store it or something. But otherwise, earlier in the week, I go through so many emails that I have the best intentions, but things get lost. T.T., Starbucks wants us to talk about race when we go and get a cup of coffee there. That's the last thing I'd want if I went there. And who can afford to go to Starbucks? I mean, save that money. You're going to need it. I don't drink coffee there, by the way. Here's an article that I found. Typical white Negro sympathizers from afar. They love the Negroes and tell you to your face that you're a bad person. You're a racist. Well, yeah, I am a racist. Never deny it. Never deny it. It makes you feel good. You'll never know how good it makes you feel. I know it does me when people say you're a racist, and I smile and I say, yeah, why aren't you? When giving them the facts about Negroes, about crime, neighborhood disintegration, and so on, they just, you know, lights are on, but nobody's home. Here's the article. If Starbucks wants us to talk about race, let's start with why they don't have a Starbucks coffee houses in some of America's cities that are mostly black or have a racially charged history. I love this when they go to throw it down the hypocrite's throats. My friend looked up various cities and found that there are no Starbucks coffee houses in many of them. Places like Highland Park, Michigan, which is at the center of Detroit, is inhabited by a population that is 94% Negro. Or in Benton Harbor, Michigan, which is almost 90% Negro. There is not a Starbucks in either town. There is not a Starbucks in East St. Louis, Illinois, in which 98% of the population is Negro American. Nor is there one in Gary, Indiana, whose population is 85% Negro. You know, as far as Gary is concerned, we should cut that off and give that area up there in the extreme northwest, give that to Illinois. They're going down the tube anyhow. The recent remembrance of the march on Selma, Alabama, had the president walking down the street with many people who fought for civil wrongs. But once again, Selma doesn't have a Starbucks. Neither does Ferguson, Missouri. Guess why? Here's the point. If Starbucks wants to have a conversation about race, perhaps they should explain why they are not accessible to most of those they claim to advocate for and champion. If being of a different race than white is higher on their list of desirables, why isn't Starbucks putting their money where their mouth is? Well, because all corporations are, you know, their interest is strictly in profit, and they're two-faced, and they're hypocrites, and that's the way they all are at the top. The farther you go up the line in the money tree, the farther you go when you climb up to the top, you'll find the biggest hypocrites, swine, criminals, corruption, and everything, because that's what that's where it's at. Like when you vote for some guy in your local area, he becomes maybe a city councilman, and the next thing he runs for state office, and he might make it as a state representative, and each step of the way he's getting more corrupt. And then all of a sudden he goes for Congress, and then, boy, that's really getting into the corruption. And he gets up there, and then if he gets through all this and gets corrupt enough, well, he might even have a chance to run for president and be a manipulated puppet for the rest of his life. Gee, sounds like fun. You know, I play bits from Max Kaiser's money show every once in a while on here, which he does a great job. But progressives are strange people. I mean, now they think we're strange, but I think they're strange because they don't use common sense. They use common sense on a lot of things like the money and the environment and corporate greed and, you know, predatory capitalism, warfare and all that. They're pretty good. But when you get to race, they go totally off the rails. Max Kaiser had a black guy who's supposed to be a talk show guy from L.A. on today. I'm not going to play it on the show here, but I'll send you a copy. It was the craziest thing I ever heard. And Max even fell for the guy saying, well, as he calls it, melanomalism or something. He doesn't say black. It's all based on skin pigment, which we know that's not true or shouldn't be true. But he actually said it, that as these non-melan type people moved north, these Negroes moved north, they turned white. And Max Keiser went along with it. They leave. Max Keiser's always talking about the poor and the working class. But I guess we're the white working class are invisible to him, because they don't separate the super wealthy and the real crooks of the capitalist system and the political system from us, regular people. Now, I will say that we're regular working class are lazy, and they're not lazy at work. They work hard, but they're lazy when it comes to rising up and supporting their own interests. And these guys, even like Max Keiser and these guys, and Mike Malloy and these guys, they look the other way when it comes to white workers. I've never heard one of them say anything about white workers. They can say something about workers and like that, but they tend to just fall all over backwards for negrophilia. And of course, they go about the disproportionate number of blacks in prison. Well, there's some truth to that, and the drugs and everything like that, and people being shoved into the prison. But let's look at it in reality, that a large percentage of those people are committing actual crimes in the streets. I mean, how can you deny that? I mean, do the cops watch them more carefully? Well, of course they watch them more carefully. If I see a black guy walking down my road here by my house, I'm going to have my video camera right on him, man. I'm watching him. Why? Because of the odds. You know, the percentage of Negroes that are thinking about criminal activity or breaking into your house or raping or something is pretty high compared to the whites. Now, there's plenty of crap in the whites. We certainly need to fleece out all these bad people in the white working class. But anyhow, I'm going to send that to you, because it'll drive you crazy, and then you might go out and do something. Well, don't do something too wild. Anyhow, I apologize for Max Keiser on that, and also for Mike Malloy, who they do good work, but when it comes to race, forget it. Hey, T.T., I was just watching Pearl Harbor Declassified on the American History Channel, traditionally known as the Hitler Channel. Hold on here. Like I told you, I have to turn off that program from speech to print before I do anything else after I use it, because if I don't, my computer goes crazy. Anyhow, T.T., I was watching the Pearl Harbor Declassified on the American History or Hitler Channel, March 19, 2015 at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The narrator was talking about what an amazing fluke it was that someone was filming with a movie camera just as the Arizona was hit by a Japanese bomb, which went through the decks and detonated a large amount of gunpowder, destroying the ship in a massive explosion. This film must have been used for propaganda. Well, of course. I just wondered if anyone ever thought that Roosevelt might have arranged for the detonation of the gunpowder during the Japanese attack that he knew was coming. It makes me think about the Jews who were set up to film the 9/11 attack. Do you ever hear of any speculation about Arizona? Arizona, the ship? No. Well, I mean, it's obvious that Roosevelt was a crook and a warmonger, and Harry Truman the man that the Klan would not allow to join, and his dropping of the A-bombs, stupid idiot, which our so-called country will never live that down. It's just that the media is everywhere all the time, and they're taking massive amounts of film, and all they have to do, the government go in and find what they want, cut it up, put it together, and they've got a documentary. So that's the way that works. If you take enough pictures, you got a picture of everything, and you can design it any way you want, which they do. And with Photoshop and all that kind of stuff, anything goes. They could show me standing over a pile of dead bodies, and it would look just like it was true. ATT, this is just an idea, but since you did a week-long series on Hitler last month, well, not just on Hitler, but it was everything churning around him. But anyhow, and devoted another week on Hitler recently. Well, I hope it's not just seen as on Hitler. What I'm trying to get across is the entire mess that surrounded all that stuff, not just concentrating on Hitler. I was wondering if you can devote a week or a couple of days on the Civil War. I feel it's just as important as World War II, as far as the devastating impact it had on white people. Well, I agree, and I have done this before. You got to remember, I've been doing this for how many decades? Been making radio shows for 20 years, and I've done about everything once or twice, but I'll do it again, but I'll do it from a revisionist point of view, not the revisionists in Los Angeles, but my revision, my library. One movie you might watch, if you haven't watched it, to get a pretty good idea of what was going on with the common white people is Cold Mountain. That movie is one of the best I've seen, is exposing the rich and the poor and so many of the problems that occurred during the war. In fact, they were going out with groups to round up people who weren't in the army and make them be in the army, conscription, and they'd shoot them if they tried to run away. I mean, this was supposed to be among friends. Of course, my position is quite clear on this. I condemn the plantation system as a program that inhibited the white small farmers that would have used that property and have families in the South and not become powerful to where they want to have wars. You see, you get too much wealth concentrated on a certain group of people, and sooner or later they're going to have a war. That's just the way it is. You name me one era of time when that didn't happen. And the obscene wealth of the plantation people, which was, incidentally, most of it was invested in northern banks. And you got a recipe for civil war, violence, and all that kind of stuff. And guess who has to do the bleeding? Oh, yes, small percentage of the people at the top, the blue bloods, spill their blood, but the majority of people who die are always usually working class people with nothing to gain. They didn't have any property, didn't have any plantations or anything like that. And, of course, the blacks, they were never really freed in a sense. They went from chattel slavery into wage slavery, and at the unfortunately, as a weapon against the white race and the white working class to water down the wages. And that goes on all over the world. Went on here for a long, long time. Now the capitalists have spread it around the world. Keep those wages down. Keep people so busy working to survive, they don't have time to rise up and kick their asses. Well, I guess you know how bad the water situation is getting in the West. Of course, when I ran for Congress in 1980, that was one of my programs to start limiting the water, especially in the Imperial Valley and the San Joaquin Valley, using drip irrigation instead of this just pouring water out on the ground. And in the cities also, I recommended all the cities on the coast go to desalinization. They never even talked about it. I mean, the big papers, anything I came up with that made sense, they would not print. So, and I've been talking about it ever since I had a friend who had a ranch out in Colorado up in the higher elevation. And he was a big wheat grower. And he said, "Tom, we're drilling farther and farther and farther down to get water. I mean, we're talking hundreds and sometimes 1,000 feet to get water to raise wheat." Probably they're not even raising any wheat by this time. He's been dead a long time, so I don't get information. But we all, you know, we've been telling you they run out of water, and I don't know. The masses of people are just so stupid that they've got to be told what to think. And if the press doesn't tell them what to think and their schools don't tell them what to think, they don't think. I mean, half the time they're thinking about the wrong things, and then most of the time they're not thinking at all. Oh, we got to take care of these poor people that are in a bad situation in South America because our government and the State Department caused it. Ronald Reagan and his Iran-Contra thing, but down in South America, we got to get those Sandinistas, you know. Well, why do we have to get those Sandinistas? Well, they have communist influence. Well, so what? Let them run their country the way they see fit by going in there with our military and raising all kinds of hell. Guess what? Millions of Nicaraguans came to Los Angeles. Yeah. And you name the country, and they're coming into all the cities first around the United States. Because why? Our military-industrial complex goes into the country, rapes the country, occupies the country, and the people, and there's warfare going on, and the revolutionaries, and the people say, "Shit, I'm getting out of here," and they'll do anything to get out of there because of the situation our State Department and government caused. I don't think there's hardly anything in the world today that's really bad going on that you won't find American predatory capitalists and the military and military-industrial complex at the bottom, and the CIA and all that. I mean, you know, I say, you want to solve the problem? Well, solve it here. Solve it at the top, not at the bottom. You're not going to solve anything by murdering millions of peasants in the Middle East. You're just going to drive them into Europe, into France, and into England. Then people are going to say, "Why the hell are they here? God damn, get them out of here." Well, God damn it, it's your government that caused it. Most of the people in Nicaragua hadn't thought about coming to L.A. before we went down there and screwed around with their country. Same way with Mexico. Like I told you, with NATFA, that program disenfranchised and pauperize more people in Mexico than anything. The farmers, especially agriculture, went to hell. So what do? Oh, let's load up the car and go to L.A. Now you got a water problem in California. Oh, shit. How did that happen? Well, it might be that you got about 4 times the population in California that it can support. There's only so much water to go around. I mean, these problems are, I mean, they're so right in your face, and they've been in my face ever since the late 60s, and I've been talking about it ever since the late 60s. And, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? I can't have much sympathy for the population of California. I do would like to get my kids out of there. They're in California, Southern California. But they're going to have to decide that themselves. But anyhow, what you going to do? You can take a horse to the trough, but if he don't want to drink, you ain't going to make him drink. You can beat on his ass with a 2x4. He's not going to drink. So, like I've said for decades, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel. And now I hear all of a sudden there's a big crisis. Everybody on the radio, we got a water problem. Well, number one, in most areas, you don't own your own water. Why do you think the big corporations like Nestle's and all of them went through South America and places like that and bought up water rights? You know, people in Colombia can't get water, but there's plenty of water, but the corporations own the water. Now, we have seeds of massive revolution have been sowed, and they got to come to fruition one of these days. There's just no way out. And it's going to be more or less a massive world revolutionary situation. I was anti-war way back and was anti-Vietnam War, and I paid the price for it, too. But I had no reason to go to Vietnam and kill Vietnamese. If you ask the average guy that went over there now, well, why did you go? What was going on over there? Why did we go over there? They're going to have a problem telling you. And, or some glib type thing. Well, we went over there to free the South Vietnamese from those bastards, their cousins in North Vietnam. Same in Korea. It's all been a game. All been a corrupt bunch of shit. It's all that way. And like I've said before, for the first few decades of my political experience, I was going along with the right wing and the anti-communist thing until I finally figured out that it was all false flag, all bullshit. So anyhow, that's my position, and I'm sticking to it. Even most of the people in the Midwest here, they don't know who owns their water in their town. We've got something here called the American Water Company or something. I'll bet you anything it's owned by somebody, maybe even in Asia. I've been going to go down and find out. But it's not the citizens of the Warsaw, the city. It's not the city. Foreign interests own the freeway up here in northern Indiana. They sold it out to some, I think, Eastern European or Arab outfit and Australians. I mean, pretty soon we won't be able to even drive on our own highways unless you got enough money to pay the toll, because they'll keep raising the toll. But maybe that's good, too, due to poverty and so forth. The American white people that live in these small towns will circle the wagons, and people will run stores downtown in the areas where they've fled to the outer rim for Walmart and so forth. And maybe it's the best thing that's happened. Maybe it's great. Maybe it's going to work in our favor. Yeah. If you can't take on the highways and travel like you want to, well, you're going to stay at home and do things around your community, like raising vegetables and raising animals for beef and pork and all that and chickens. You don't need to go to the next state or the next country. You can do it right here at home. So maybe all this is leading us in the right direction. I hope so. Let's listen to this little blurb that's happening here in the United States, but this is happening in Brazil right now, and it's going to happen here. Now, this audio is a little scratchy, so I apologize for that.
About the drought and the horrific water condition in California. Bruce in California writes, Mike, as a 50-plus year resident of California, I have never seen such dry conditions. But because there are no mandatory rations, I noticed it. I still take showers, still flush the commode, and still have water when I turn on the tap. So within my little world, there is no shortage evident. But it's terrible. We get so little rain that it's obvious something isn't right. Like you said, we can't make it rain. The options run. Horrific water condition in California. Bruce in California writes, Mike, as a 50-plus year resident of California, I have never seen such dry conditions. But because there are no mandatory rations, I noticed it. I still take showers, still flush the commode, and still have water when I turn on the tap. So within my little world, there is no shortage, evident. But it's terrible. We get so little rain that it's obvious something isn't right. Like you said, we can't make it rain. The options run. This is from Bruce in California also. Regarding California water shortage, he writes, it's not just us, Mike. The largest city in the Western Hemisphere is virtually dry. And he sent me a link from Bloomberg.com. And this is from a couple of months ago. But Latin America's largest metro area may run out of water next month. That would be, it didn't happen, I don't think. They're talking about December of 2014, which is 3 months ago. For some of the 20 million residents of Sao Paulo, Brazil, the nation's financial hub, taps are already running dry. The chief executive officer of the state-run water utility told the city council that supplies are only guaranteed until mid-November, unless it can tap the last of the water in its Cantaria reservoir, which apparently they did. The four-lake complex that supplies half of Sao Paulo has already been drained at 96% of its water capacity amid Brazil's worst drought in 80 years. Regulators have so far refused to allow... I don't know what this is. The Saneamiento Básico do Estado de Sao Paulo, known as the BEST, to use the rest on concern it's mismanaging supplies. I guess that's a water company. The chief executive officer of the state-run water utility said there's been no rationing yet. Residents in neighborhoods across the city are already complaining of scattered shortages. Bars near the say they are serving drinks in plastic cups because they can't wash dishes. The 1.5 million square meter Ibirapuera Park, surrounded by some of the city's wealthiest neighborhoods, was without water on Saturday when temperature reached 90 degrees Fahrenheit, 32 degrees Celsius. Two restaurants bordering Praça da Sé, a square in Sao Paulo's historic downtown area, also complained of water shortages lasting as long as 12 hours a day. The owner of a vegetarian restaurant near the main business street of Paulista Avenue said, quote, when we call the water company, we only get a recording that blames maintenance. We're left with the feeling that we're helpless because the water company gives us no information or forecasts. The water company said it had technical problems, which affected the southern area of the city at the beginning of the week. Also a pipe rupture, yada, yada, yada. Meanwhile, rising temperatures are increasing the need for water. Last week, this would be in October, Sao Paulo recorded heat of 36.7 degrees Celsius, the highest since 1933. At the end of October, it is hoped that rains will become more regular, and from November to February, they will be in the historical average, according to weather forecaster Climatempo. Latin America's biggest publicly traded water utility, that is the one I couldn't pronounce, has plunged 26% this year compared to the 2% gain in the Bloomberg World Water Index. The one in Brazil has lost value. So, as Bruce in California says, it's not just here. Sorry to have garbled up that article, but I don't speak Portuguese. And Lee in New York City sent me this. This storm.
I just installed that computer that I'm recording those on, and I've got to go from mic to speaker, mic to line, because I'm getting way too much audio. Sorry about that. But if you think that people flee, if you know that people flee like they did from Central America because of some military involvement, imagine a city of 20 million runs out of water. Imagine a city of several million here in California runs out of water. What's going to happen? Well, number one, you're going to have massive violence and crime, and then these people are going to try to flee to go someplace to get water. Now, the problem is with California, or at least Southern California, if they go east, it gets even drier for a long way until they get into the Midwest. So first, it's my opinion, they're going to go north, and they're going to swamp Washington, Idaho, those states up there. And then when that becomes waterlogged, or they put the state guard out to shoot them down like they did in the Dust Bowl, then they're going to be forced to move east and get across all that dry area, and then they start spilling into the Midwest and filling up the place. Now, like in South America, in a city like San Paulo with 20 million people, if massive numbers of them start to move, the other regions of the country will have to arm to protect themselves. And, of course, who's the military going to support? Always the rich, always the big landowners. And then they start pouring into another country. They're going to put all the armies out on these borders to stop this avalanche of millions of people bearing down on them, and they're going to shoot them dead. I mean, that's the extreme situation, but that is coming. I don't see any way out of it. And, of course, even Mexico, they've got problems with their aquifers in Mexico City. I mean, what do you got, 10 million people in Mexico City, and you've got a third of them that are poverty-stricken, living in the slums? They run out of water, baby. You think you've got a problem with illegal aliens now. You haven't even begun to realize how bad it can be. So, as like Camp of the Saints, the book laid out, the future, as I can see it, is even much worse than Camp of the Saints. But it's along those lines. But still, the white people are still sleeping. They're still sleeping. They think we get told this stuff, false flag all the time, and maybe not false flag, and we'll just go along with it. We'll do whatever the government tells us to do, we'll do. Oh, boy. Remember this. Racism is simply nature's defense against tribal intrusion. And that's it. That's what it's about.
He was dead before he hit the floor. Who is he?
Special Agent Terrence McGraw, counterintelligence unit out of Chicago, on special assignment for me.
You ever hear of the group?
No.
They're a right-wing extremist cell. They're not your usual anti-government fringe types. They've got deep pockets and influence. McGraw was getting close to revealing their leadership when he was taken out. The only member we've been able to get a visual on is this guy. Goes by the name of Rodesky. McGraw had him pegged as the group's spotter in charge of recruitment. And they can afford the best, mostly freelancers. Combination of ex-CIA and DOD operatives and hitmen.
So what do they want?
Same as any terrorist group. Power. To what end, we don't know. What we do know is, before McGraw was killed, he'd uncovered a plot to assassinate Senator Joseph Kaifi.
That's the guy running for president.
The one who will be president, if you believe the polls.
Why Kaifi?
McGraw couldn't provide any more details.
So what's your next move?
Nothing. I'm calling off the investigation. Come again?
That's right. As of today, the FBI is no longer investigating the group.
Okay, I don't get it.
You had a
major conspiracy beef here, not to mention a dead agent, and what, you want to back off?
Officially, yes. Unofficially. There's a reason why McGraw's cover was blown. He was betrayed by someone in the Bureau.
What, like a mole?
I could be wrong. I hope I am. But if I'm not, there's no one I can trust anymore. Except you. I trust you because I knew your father. We came up in the Bureau together. He was my friend. I trust you because after he left us, well, you've been like a son to me, Jason. So any idea who sold us out?
I love moles. Viva moles. Hackers and moles. I love them.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Trails to you till we meet.